We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
From Illinois Public Media, this is Focus. Good morning. I'm Celeste Quinn. Dog trainers Jim Keel and Carol Lindholm are with us this morning to talk about dogs. They are with the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana. Listeners, join us with a telephone call or by email. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We have a toll-free number, that number 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL, and our email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. Good to see you. Welcome back.
Welcome back. It's nice to be back.
Your dreams were your ticket out.
Did you enjoy your snow day?
Actually, I left the house to go to the mall, and it was closed.
That's right.
I didn't know the mall was closed.
If you had
on what day
gone
did you do
to
this?
Wednesday,
if you had gone to our website, you would have known the mall was closed, or listened to Morning Edition.
There was absolutely nothing open on Wednesday.
Well, Sam's was open because I thought if I'm out, I'm going somewhere. So Sam's was open, and I was one of a dozen customers in the place.
Do you had no trouble getting out of your driveway?
I had quite a bit of trouble getting out of the driveway. But I am not to be thwarted by mere snow, so I made it to the mall.
Well, I got a couple of days here. We got a good, nice cardiovascular workout in the morning, getting out of the driveway and getting the car ready to go. We don't have a garage, so.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so it was an effort.
All that ice.
Yeah. And the snow now is like concrete. I don't think if you didn't shovel it out, pretty soon after it fell, you're out of luck.
Do we have somebody there?
We do. Should we talk with a listener? This is a listener calling in from Indiana, waiting for us on line four. Hello.
Hello. Besides the zillion questions I have about black Labradors, retrievers, one thing I'd like to know about is most of the time when I let him out into the backyard, he shakes his head, very seriously. And sometimes he does that when he's out in the yard, too. And I just wondered, is this some kind of What is that anyway? It's the kind of shaking you do when the dog is wet, except it's just from the shoulders forward, putting just the head, not the rest of the body. I was wondering what that's all about, if it's about anything at all.
Does he shake the rest of his body or just his head?
No, just the head. Just like this morning before I let him out into the small porch area that's enclosed and. Before we go into it, usually he shakes his head a lot. Then after that's it. Then he goes outdoors and does his thing like this morning. And occasionally I'll see him do it in the afternoons when I'm going to go get him and bring him back in the house. But a number of times he'll do that shaking. And first thing when you see it, you think of it, it must be his head's wet or something like that, because that's not it at all.
Does he rub his head along the floor inside the house?
No, I thought about that. Nothing. And we took him to the vet. Everything's okay there. Nothing in the ears along them.
Yeah, a lot of dogs, at least the Malamutes, when they wake up, they will shake as if they were wet. And I think it's just like when we wake up, we stretch and yawn.
Okay.
And
that would make sense to what I've observed,
And, dogs shake to get water out of their coats, but I'm not at all sure they know that there's water in their coat. You know what I mean? It's they have no way of grabbing their coat and seeing that it's wet.
Right.
They just know instinctively that they should shake it off. But we've had dogs get dirty and shake it off. So shaking is kind of a normal thing, especially after they wake up.
Okay.
And I wouldn't worry about it too much.
Okay. A quick second question. I just thought of something. What the one who got the black lab and talked to the vet, and they talked to us, and they talked about the problems that some labs have with their joints. And I was wondering if there's a certain age level they come to when that has to be looked at seriously and paid attention to? Or is it just something that happens and then you start working with it then? He's not overweight. He weighs about 100. He's about 2 years old right now.
Does he appear to have any joint problems?
Nope, nothing. I mean, God, no. Sometimes you hope, sometimes. Yeah. But well, no, I just wonder, maybe, you know, let's say after, I was told that the normal lifespan is often around 10 to 12 years. And none of this have I checked in books or anything else. I'm just going by what people are talking about at the vet's office and what the vet has told me and his assistant.
100 pounds is kind of a lot for a lab, don't you think, Jim?
It depends. A lot of labs are pretty big dogs. And if this is, you know, a tall dog, he could carry 100 pounds.
Okay.
But normally 100 pounds, even for a male, is kind of heavy. There are ways you can check if he has joint problems or is likely to, and that is the usual hip X-ray and elbow X-rays to see if there's dysplasia or what is it in the elbows? I don't know.
It just escaped me.
Yeah. A lot of agility people are doing elbow X-rays.
Goldens have to have their elbows done.
Oh, do they? Mm-hmm. Not Malamutes. But all – most breeding animals, you should get a hip X-ray to make sure they don't have dysplasia. Dysplasia is kind of a disease without symptoms when the dog is young. You can't really tell it from their movement. But when they get old, dysplastic hips are much more likely to get arthritic. And so if you take the X-ray, you can predict whether the dog is later on when he's 9 or 10 is going to be arthritic.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thank you. That's helpful.
Next, we take a call from a listener in Champaign on line one. Hi.
Is that me?
That's you.
I wanted to mention the column from the editorial page on the News Gazette. It's about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, by John Foreman. It's called The Old Black Dog. It is one of the most beautiful pieces of writing that I have read recently. I unfortunately sent my copy off to someone else. Everybody who's read it has cried over it.
It brought a tear to my eye that morning too.
Yeah, wasn't that a wonderful?
Mm-hmm. It was.
Oh my! Oh my! Oh my! That's the only thing I wanted to say. So I'll let you go on to somebody with something better.
Well, thank you for calling in. That was lovely, and I don't know if John Foreman's listening, but.
It was a very nice
article.
Maybe
somebody would pass on that compliment to him. It was a lovely column, and I had wondered, you know, I kind of wondered what was going on with the dog and the boy and the bride, because he hadn't done a column like that for a while. So yeah, the foreman's dog is up there in years. You okay, Carol?
I'm fine.
Okay.
I should push my cough button, right?
Yeah. You can do that.
I will do that.
That cough button makes you cough, so don't.
And there was another piece in the paper a couple of weeks back about a horse, and I want to say the horse was blind, and maybe,
I read that one as well.
That was really moving. There's a woman in the Danville area who works with horses, and do you remember the circumstances of that, Carol?
There were two stories. One was a horse that somebody found lying in a field and rehabilitated it and brought it back to health. The blind one, I can't remember.
This was a horse with part of the interest of it was that the horse was like some kind of Arabian.
Mm-hmm.
And someone had adopted the horse, but it needed a lot of work because it needed a lot of socialization.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was really interesting.
People don't think about the needs of horses in that respect.
Also, it brought to mind as animals age, we should do this, we should do maybe a show on this specifically, but the things that we can do to help them age well.
That would be a great show to do.
I don't know if there is someone at Vet Med whose specialty is companion animals and
gerontology. Who are you thinking of?
I'm not thinking of anyone in particular.
Yeah.
Wasn't there someone on this very program here, maybe several months ago, that talked about how to help? He wrote a book.
Oh, that was on Fresh Air,
wasn't it?
Fresh Air.
Nicholas Dodman,
mm-hmm.
his new book. That was very good. I enjoyed listening to that.
It was very good. This is Focus on AM 580 and online at will.illinois.edu. Good morning. I'm Celeste Quinn. We're talking about dogs this morning. This is a show we do once a month on the first Friday of the month in the 11 o'clock hour of the program. And with us today are dog trainers Carol Lindholm and Jim Keel of the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana. Listeners, you can join us this morning with a phone call or by email. The number, the phone number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. And the email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. Your dog's enjoying the cold weather? Jim,
if they haven't really said anything, but they like snow. They love snow. The puppies are frolicking and playing in the snow. This snow, though, we were talking about this before we went on the air, but the snow is very hard.
Mm-hmm.
And the puppies are small enough that they don't really crash through the snow, so they're kind of running on top of the snow right now. But yeah, they like it. The adults are happy. Dogs can take cold, especially Arctic dogs, much better than they can take heat. So they're having a good time playing with each other.
Yeah. How old are the pups now?
They were 4 months or 5 months old.
They're beautiful. The puppies are very beautiful.
How many are there?
We have five right now.
So, and when will they be placed?
Two of them are already placed, but far away. And the people who are going to get the dogs, their situation is up in the air, so we're just waiting to see where they land. They may come back to Champaign. They may not.
Mm.
And so the dog may have to take an air flight or not. So
leaving on a jet plane.
Don't know when I'll be back again.
333-9455, 800-222-9455, and will-talk@illinois.edu. When are spring training classes coming up at the dog training club?
It's good that you ask, because we don't know, since we canceled this entire week.
Wow.
Beginning with, and there were many, many, many conversations on Sunday and Monday morning, and we decided to cancel the entire week of classes. We've already canceled Tuesday classes once, and I can't remember. I don't think we did Thursday. I can't remember. But they built in a cushion of 3 weeks because of the weather, and we're plowing right through that. So I know when they're supposed to start, but I don't know. I'm reluctant to say anything because
it'll be around the beginning of April.
Yeah, that's about as good as we can get right now.
Okay.
We can't ask our instructors or students to travel in such terrible conditions.
Right.
And we couldn't cherry pick the days that we would close because we didn't know how bad things were going to be. And they were bad, so.
Yeah. And the club is, you know, kind of out there. And I imagine you've got some
a lot of people don't agree with me. The drifting is a significant concern, and the ice, and so we canceled the whole week.
We've got a couple of listeners waiting to talk with us, so let's go next to Orland Park, line 4. Hello.
Hi, how are you guys?
Fine, how are you?
Good. Hey, I've got a 13-year-old male poodle, and we have also just acquired a 12-week miniature poodle, and having a little bit of friction, and the dogs are starting to get over that. But my real problem is, the 13-year-old dog is starting to go deaf, okay? And he does a lot of barking after the puppy, and it's kind of hard to communicate to the 13-year-old that everything's going to be okay and to try to get him to settle down. I swear he's going to drive me nuts barking all day, and I was wondering if you guys might have some suggestions.
when he barks, which dog is barking, the older or the younger?
It would be the 13-year-old.
Okay. And is he a standard or a miniature? Or?
They're both miniature.
Okay. And the problem is that the old guy is barking at the puppy when the puppy starts dancing around.
Right? And the old guy is going deaf.
It's like he's scolding the young mm-hmm. puppy, but, you know, we try reassuring the older dog everything's okay. But like I said, we also have a hard time communicating with the 13-year-old to try to ease him.
The problem here, you know, is pretty obvious, but the old dog it feels he's entitled to tell the younger dog what to do. And the younger dog probably takes that as an invitation to play. We're just talking about our puppies, and they're a little older than your puppy, but not much. And last night, for example, we have Doris, the old dog. She's 11. And the puppies kind of line up and growl at her with their tails wagging, but just to play. And Doris sits there going, arr, and baring her teeth at them. And it looks pretty ferocious, but nothing ever happens.
Correct.
It's just the way they interact. Your guy is interacting by barking, and it's annoying. Doris is just growling. It really doesn't bother us. It's not loud or anything. So the problem is your guy is barking. He's deaf. Make it a little harder to...
Yeah, well, the thing I'm doing now is when we get an episode, I usually pull out chew sticks.
And the
13-year-old has a hard time barking when he has a chew stick.
I was going to suggest that very same thing, not necessarily chew sticks, but something that is tasty but long-lasting.
Did he bark before you got the puppy?
No, he was the king of the house.
And what do you do? Do you do anything with the puppy when the old guy starts to bark?
Well, not really. Sometimes, you know, we usually let him try to work it out between the two of them, and the puppy usually bows. You know, he'll back down, and roll over for the 13-year-old. But I was just hoping there might be something further that I could do to comfort the older.
Well, so how long have you had the puppy?
3 weeks.
What the puppy is doing is very, very typical and submissive behavior. He's actually, this is the game. It's like the game with Doris and our puppies. That is, and every litter we've ever had where the puppies go to the adult dogs. The adult dogs growl, snarl at them, snap at them, and the puppies go up to the old dog, roll on their backs submissively. They pee a little bit. So what your puppy is doing is, I think, two different things. One, it's submitting and saying, you're the boss. And to seal his position as boss, the old guy probably would growl, or in his case, he'll bark. So it's just a natural reaction to what the puppy's doing. And trying to overcome natural reactions is not always easy.
So when the puppy's in his crate sleeping, what does your older dog do?
He sleeps too, then.
Okay.
So. I would try to...
It's kind of a difficult thing because with the fact that he's deaf might have some influence here. I don't know. I know that when dogs lose their hearing, they'll sometimes stand and bark, and there's nothing to really bark at. And you might want to ask your vet how bad that hearing loss is if they can determine it.
Okay.
The other thing, do you have a crate where you can put the puppy for a while?
Yeah, we do.
I'd give it, if the old guy starts barking, I'd put the puppy in as a timeout. Or you could put the old guy in as a timeout, but I think he'd keep barking. Just to separate them temporarily, you know, maybe for 10 minutes and, you know, get the situation back. But the puppy is doing what puppies do. It's very natural. And the old guy's doing what old guys do, except it's annoying. So chew sticks, what are those, Buddha balls or?
Oh, Kongs or Kongs. Busy Buddies and things like that that they can play with.
A toy, a nice toy that the old guy doesn't like and the puppy would enjoy. You know, get the puppy away from him.
Right.
Because right now, the old guy is the only social interaction with a dog that he's got. And so he's, you know, all of his society things and his intuitions, he's going up to the adult dog, rolling over, play bowing, doing all that kind of stuff. And it's just annoying the old guy, obviously. So I'd try timeouts, chewies, those sorts of things. I think the behavior is going to go down a little bit as the puppy gets a little older and they get a group, a pack between the two dogs that's where the puppy isn't being a puppy, but he's just being another dog.
And play with the older one. You know, 13 in a miniature poodle is not that old, where a 13-year-old Labrador Retriever is much older. So just, you know, spend some one-on-one time with him and see if that doesn't help a little bit.
Okay.
But you said you'd seen improvement, right?
Yes, we have.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your input.
You're welcome.
Okay. Bye now.
Bye. Next, we go to Charleston, line 2. Good morning.
Oh, good morning. My question is somewhat related, but I don't have a second dog yet. I have a now 16-month-old female German Shepherd, and I want to get another pup, another German Shepherd. So I thought I'd get a male, but I wondered what advice you have for introducing the two and how I should treat the new dog. I'm a little, I'm not sure how it's going to work out.
Your German Shepherd that you have now is a female?
Yes.
Okay.
Spayed female. And the male will be neutered, and they're companion dogs.
It's more logistical how you do the introduction. I think that because she's young, she'll enjoy the company of another. And
yep.
I'll tell my story. Let's see which one. Well, I can do the story of when I brought Andy home from the shelter, and Robbie was he was maybe 3, I think, maybe 4. But I fell in love with this little golden doodle at the shelter and adopted her. And then I had to bring her home. Well, Robbie's a big male. I knew that they get along fine, but I didn't want to just walk in the door with a dog. And
right.
I just felt that wasn't the best way to handle it. So what I did, and I know and maybe this was wrong, but it worked for me, I brought her home and I put her out in the backyard.
Uh-huh.
And then I went in and greeted Robbie, and I said, I think there's something out in the backyard, Robbie. Let's look. So we went to the patio doors, and there's little Andy, and he was all excited. He was, oh, my God, there's a dog in the yard. So I went out with him.
You didn't take it as a territorial threat?
No. He's just an easygoing guy, but I just wanted to keep his reaction appropriate to the situation and not bowl her over. And I went outside with him. I said, let's go see who this dog is and see who she belongs to. And I'm keeping up this, you know, mindless chatter. And he didn't know what I was saying. And it went very well. He wanted to play with her. She had just had spay surgery, so she couldn't play as much as he'd like to. But we had no problems whatsoever. But
okay.
And another time when I brought another dog home before these two, my girlfriends went out and picked them up. And they came to the door with Hulky, it was. And they came to my front door, and they came in, and everybody played, and they left. And I said, my God, they left this puppy here. Mm. It was like, you know, it entertained me, but I was trying to be serious and not make a big deal out of it. And I always favored the current dog over the newer dog to make certain they didn't feel that they were displaced in their role.
Yeah.
And, I've not encountered a problem. I'd be more worried about bringing a cat home, to be frank. Than to bring
I can't bring cats around. My German Shepherd's already proved to be a little bit hard on them. Okay, well, she wants to play awfully bad, and I assume the new puppy will too. So that's a good thing. So you don't think So you think introducing them outside the house is the...
The common wisdom is to go to a park or someplace.
Okay, some neutral.
Right, where it's not her territory. German shepherds are a little more territorial than the dogs we have.
Right.
And
I want them to be territorial together. Well, I want them to be a team.
They can be. It depends on how old the puppy is, because your dog is really still a puppy.
Yeah.
But a year.
Well, the new puppy will be 8 weeks when I bring it home.
Well, it would be an odd dog, even a German Shepherd, for territory, that if you brought a puppy home that young, that they would, you know.
Not feel threatened.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a whole different thing. She would probably look at the puppy and growl at it and do that kind of stuff for about 30 seconds, and then they'd start to play.
Have your breeder bring the puppy and meet you, as Jim said, in a neutral site.
Uh-huh.
Or what you could do is kind of like they do with babies. You could have, I assume you know where you're purchasing the puppy.
Yeah.
You could take an article of your clothing and put it in with the puppy so they know your smell, and the puppy smell will be on the article of clothing, and then bring it back. And and then the dog puppy will be more familiar to the current dog by odor.
Yeah.
So you could try that.
Okay. Okay. Well, those are good suggestions. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
You're very welcome. Thanks for the call. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, if you'd like to talk with dog trainers Carol Lindholm and Jim Keel. The toll-free number, 800-222-9455. And our email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. I suppose by keeping that light patter up, you're calming yourself down, and
exactly.
Animals really,
because we always
read.
Anticipate the worst, and by just chatting like that, then I think it diffuses any concerns, or the dog just becomes more accepting, I think. But every situation is different, so what worked for me may not work for someone else. It depends on the breed and the ages, and so, but it's worked for me in the past.
Yeah.
Just kind of like, you know, everything's fine. This dog is going to hang out with us now.
Yeah.
Whoever left you in the backyard made a big mistake, but it's ours now.
But you're right. It depends on the breed. And here we were dealing with a German Shepherd that's very territorial and a guard dog. And if it sees a foreign dog on its territory, will set up an alarm. I don't think she would attack it or anything, but she might go, danger, danger. There's
and so you
dog
want
here.
The puppy to have a good experience, too, not to walk in the door and just, you know.
Go, yikes.
Yeah. And so you want to try and lay a groundwork that's going to be as near to perfect as you can.
Yeah. Two German Shepherd puppies. That's a handful. I'm sure it's lots of fun, but.
Lots of fun, though.
Yeah. Let's take another call. This is a listener in Champaign on line one. Hi.
Hi. Can I ask a cat question?
Sure.
Okay, my daughter lives in Pennsylvania, and she adopted a litter of kittens, three of them, all females, tortoiseshells, and one of them has been having medical problems, and so they're 9 months old, born on the 5th of May, and yesterday she had the two that are healthy spayed. But she didn't want to spay the one that's having problems because she thought that would be too stressful to have that in addition to her current medical problems. So she's waiting till that's cleared up. So when the one that's sick was quite sick, the other two would lie with her and groom her and stuff like that, which usually they all have their separate sleeping places. But when she came home yesterday with the two that had been spayed, the kitten who's not been spayed goes up to them, sniffs them, and hisses at them. So can you help me understand this behavior?
I'm going to guess that, you know, when they're doing abdominal surgery, they kind of paint the area with anesthetic and a germ killer. Before they slice it open, just to make sure that the germs on the dogs or cats or even our skin don't go into
the wound
through the abdominal wall, being pushed down by the scalpel.
Right.
And that that stuff certainly has a kind of a strange odor.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm guessing that they would leave it on the cat to fight infection.
Mm-hmm.
So when she comes home, when they come home, she sniffs them, and they do not smell like they smelled before.
Yeah, that's what we were guessing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That would be my guess from the cats I've known.
And they didn't act like they did before because they were still probably
recovering
from the sedation. I think it'll pass just fine. She'll know what it's like when she gets spayed and they hiss at her.
I don't think she'll connect the dots, as it were, but we'll see. All right, thanks.
You're welcome. Next, we go to a listener in Lexington on line two. Hi.
Hi. Does it make a difference on rawhide chews where they come from? Should they be American made or?
Well, I don't use them, so I'm not one to really speak to rawhide chews. But there is an aversion to people that do purchase them. They don't care to buy them that are made outside of the United States. There may be some ingredients that are used that could be problematic, but I just don't buy any of them. So I don't think my answer is of much help to you.
We use them a lot, and my assumption is they all come from outside the United States.
There are some where it says made in the USA because people search for those never-endingly.
I've never checked. So I suppose I don't know. All I know is my dogs love rawhide chews.
I don't want to say anything to disparage a manufacturer that brings in these products that are from outside the United States.
Like Canada?
Not Canada. But some people do have had issues with some that are manufactured and come in from China, for example. And I don't know. I just don't use them. What kind of dog do you have?
I got a lab.
I like to use the raw femur bones myself from the butcher.
We use those too.
Yeah, because with the rawhides and a lab, the big chewer, you get a big chunk of that goes down to their stomach and they don't pass it. You've got a problem. So I just am paranoid about things like that.
We've never had problems with chews. We've had problems with soft plush toys and tennis balls. The dogs eat them.
Okay.
So it's better. The chews are better, I think.
You know, go online and look for an answer to your question. I think you'll find that the majority of people that you'd find in a forum or something are going to agree that they prefer the products that are made in the United States.
Okay. Thanks for your help.
Mm-hmm.
You're welcome. 333-9455, 800-222-9455, will-talk@illinois.edu. Carol Lindholm and Jim Keel of the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana are with us here this morning in this hour of Focus. My name is Celeste Quinn. So, tell us a little bit more about these bones that you like to...
Oh, now, see, and some people are adamantly opposed to them as well,
mm-hmm.
but I find that they're raw and they're frozen, and I find using those, and there's the rub. From that time the dogs are young, they're used to my picking them up because they can't have them forever.
Oh,
I'll pick them up and put them back in the freezer, but I just feel more comfortable with those, and you don't cook them. They're raw, and they're tough. They're hard bones, but they could chip a tooth on them, so there's no perfect...
Solution.
Let's
take another call. This is a listener in Humboldt. Line one. Hi.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Hi. I have a question about my dog. She's a 12-year-old black lab wannabe, and she's small. She's only a 50-pound dog. But she loves to go with me in the car someplace. But in this last year, she has gotten so that every time I get ready to leave the car, she starts shaking like she's terrified. Now, if I come back, say, even an hour later, she's asleep and she seems calm and relaxed, but the next stop we make, again, she's terrified. And I'm just wondering what to make of that and what I should do for her.
You know, I was just talking to somebody with a similar problem this weekend. One of her dogs loves to go in the car. just loves to go in the car, but doesn't want to leave the car. And so she stays in the car, and she's perfectly happy. And when they get home, she comes out of the car, but she doesn't want to be walked anywhere. She gets, you know, the car is like her security blanket. She wants to stay in the car if they go anywhere.
Well, mine doesn't seem to want to stay in the car. She wants to go where I go.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big change for her. She was always very content to stay in the car. Now she doesn't want to stay in the car.
I wonder if it's, what is she, 12?
Yes.
My thoughts, does she go through this any other time you leave her? Let's say you leave
her. Like, say, at home?
Yeah, you leave her at home and you and your family leave. She doesn't start to.
I wonder if something happened to her while she was in the car.
It's always possible.
Somebody banged on the windows or.
She seems to associate your leaving with something, and that makes her nervous. Mm-hmm. And when nothing happens that she's afraid of, she calms down. But you can never, you know, it's kind of self-rewarding. She gets up, get out of the car. She starts shaking for fear of something. The fact that nothing ever happens doesn't really solve the problem of you getting out of the car. Because when she calms down, you're not there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's possible she, you know, somebody frightened her while she was in the car, or maybe
that could be.
Siren went by.
Yeah, it's so many variables. You couldn't figure out what could have occurred, but it was upsetting to her.
But there's another thing, and we were talking about this doing a show on old dogs, but 12 for a lab is up there,
mm-hmm.
and they kind of any dog. That's old will become more attached to you. They'll follow you around a little more than mm-hmm. they used to, and their behavior changes a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So it wouldn't necessarily have to have been a traumatic incident. It's just since she's gotten older, just relies on you so much, and she just doesn't want you to leave.
Yes, that's a possibility.
Now, how can you train her out of that? You could maybe... You know, one of these femurs we're talking about, chew toy that Carol doesn't like. You know, some sort of treat as you leave that's going to take her a little while to chew up and just to take her mind off of it, off of your leaving, because that seems to be the problem.
There's a new book out that I want to read. The author is Nicole Wilde, and I have a W-I-L-D-E. I have a student in class who's got the most charming dog I've ever encountered, but he suffers from severe separation anxiety, which you'd never know because his appearance in other situations is perfectly normal. But she's the one that told me about the book, and it's called Please Don't Leave Me.
Oh, yeah.
I know. But anyway, yeah. I've yet to read that, but it's gotten some very good reviews. And that, you know, it doesn't always mean, as Jim said, leaving them in the house precipitates a separation anxiety issue. It could be the car. So I think you can get the book online, or if you've got an e-reader, you can download it there. But
yeah, I think I will.
Yeah, and Patricia McConnell has some very, very good pieces out there to read on separation anxiety. So try that.
Okay, I will. Thank you for the ideas.
You're welcome. And next we go to Piatt County, Line 4. Hi.
Oh, hello. Very briefly, I'll say that we also wondered about the bones, the rawhide bones, mm-hmm. and asked our vet, and he said that sometimes, and I don't know how you'd know, that bones from China use formaldehyde and that American bones do not.
That would be correct.
Yes, and that there are several places in town that do sell just American. In fact, I found some at Meijer's, so I was just going to say that about the formaldehyde. So thank you very much for your information.
Well, thanks for the call.
Yeah, it's formaldehyde is the... But if I'm not mistaken, it doesn't always say it on there. I'll have to look. I'll have to look this weekend at that. But I'm just happy with my femur bones. I get them at... can I name an organization?
Sure.
Old Time Meat and Deli, and they've got them cut in three different lengths because I don't want that too small. They'll get hooked over their teeth, too big, and they're unwieldy, which I don't want them to be distressed in any way, shape, or form. And I'll just buy a big bag of them for, it's like $10 or $11, and they're all cut. they're cleaned to a certain degree. The people might have an aversion to their dog chewing bones in the house, but that doesn't bother me.
Our problem, and we use the bones and very successfully. But
you get the knuckle bones too, don't you?
Yeah, sometimes.
Yeah, I don't get
whatever's going. But the one problem you have to watch out for is we have a lot of dogs. And
yes.
Very often we let one group out. Well, one of them will pick up their bone. They don't want anyone to steal it. They'll run around outside. They'll put it down and then forget about it. Somebody else will find it, pick it up, and bring it back in the house. They're full of ants.
Oh.
So we found ants walking around. Where did they come from? It came from the the bone. So.
Okay, so I don't like them to take them outside because I don't even like to see dirt on the femur bones.
Well, we don't encourage it because it plays heck with the lawnmower. Because you don't.
Oh, yeah, that would be the case.
If the grass grows up and you go over it, and boom, they kind of explode and little pieces go everywhere. So we don't like them to do it.
And yeah.
My job, Robin gets to ride the mower. My job is to run ahead of her and pick up all the stuff, and it's mostly bones.
It's like a rider in golf, you know, when you don't hit the ball far enough, then they.
A sweeper in curling, yeah.
That's quite the scene that's being painted here, isn't it?
When this camera is working, we can get some video of that one day.
Well, we could do that now.
Oh,
or
that's right.
When summer comes, we're not going to be mowing the lawn in the near future.
The other story is Tommy was living in the house because he was an old dog and was having arthritic problems. And then he died. And about a month later, I was cleaning the front room where he lived. And I moved the couch to sweep, vacuum under it. It was solid femur bones. He'd go outside, take somebody else's femur bone, bring it in, chew it, and then push it under the couch.
Smart dog.
I had a little treasure trove under there.
It was like 8x3 area, just full of bones. I filled up a garbage can full of them.
Wow.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Let's take another call.
Okay.
Listener in Champaign, line one, hello.
Yes, hi. I was wondering if you could possibly repeat the name of their author and a book that you were talking about either last month or the month before about dogs and how they perceive the world and that sort of thing that was on the New York Times bestseller list.
Dog's Purpose.
Dog's Purpose?
Is that the one I was talking about last month that got...
I think
eyes
you talked about it a couple of times.
I bought it.
Have you read it?
No, I'm afraid to read it. I know I'll cry. Does that sound right?
I don't remember.
I think that might be the book, A Dog's Purpose. It's, you know, the premise is that every dog we have in life is one we've had before.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And it gives you, it's from the dog's perspective.
Uh-huh. And it talks about how they can smell so much better and hear so much
better. I don't think that's part of this book.
Mm.
Smell so much and hear so much better than
the
people?
Humans. Yes, yeah.
Nope.
And I started to read a review or something and said, imagine you walk down the street and you can smell, you know, 50,000 things, et cetera.
That's when a dog's having a new reaction to an old thing, we always ask, you know, are you using a new cleaner or something like that? Because they can smell, you know, every time we change laundry products, they know it.
Ah, sure.
Well, read a review of A Dog's Purpose and see if that might be the book that you're thinking of.
Okay. Yeah. And you don't remember the author?
I'll look
it up. Of course, since you asked me, I can't.
Right. Okay. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Thanks for the call this morning. Carol, I'll look up the author. And I'm going to hand this article to you, and you can kind of maybe just talk a little bit about what that article says. I thought that might be germane.
I guess I better get my glasses out.
Oh, okay.
Oh, you can lend me yours? Well, we can share this.
Yeah, well, I can't read it any more than you can without glasses here. Let's see.
It's about the
dogs
and their power of smell, their sense of smell, and the evidence continues to mount that they can sniff out cancer.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that. The PBS runs frequently some very good shows on dogs and how they're able to be utilized in so many ways, and one of the ways is cancer.
Yeah. And the author of A Dog's Purpose is... Well,
here. Wait for it. Wait for it.
Loading. Loading. Here we go.
This is Bruce something, I think.
Yeah, Cameron is his last name.
Bruce Cameron?
I think so.
Yeah, I've actually...
W. Bruce Cameron.
There we go. I hate it when people use an initial instead of their first name. It makes me crazy. Jim, you're familiar with these shows they run on PBS,
oh, yeah,
too. And they, the exciting thing, more, well, this is exciting, but the dog that had the huge vocabulary, that a border collie, and I, it was over 1,000
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that was in the New York Times recently.
Yeah, that, and that was, but the guy worked with this dog like hours every day, but the dog seemed to thoroughly enjoy it. And named all the objects, and then he'd retrieve the certain objects, and it was fascinating.
The guy said the dog, he was having a hard time keeping up with the dog, keeping things going, so that the dog, because the dog was very stimulated by that.
See, and then I feel really bad, because I think I've got these two little mental geniuses at home that I never really tap into that as much as I should.
Yeah. Let's take one last call, probably our last call today. Urbana, line one, hi.
I thought you were going to say The Other Ends of the Leash as a book.
Yeah.
I don't have dogs now. Was raised with them, and but I frequently interact with them, and I thought it was really eye-opening to see how we miscommunicate with them in terms of our body language.
And it's Tricia McConnell as well that wrote The Other End of the Leash.
Yeah, I really recommend it.
Another good one that's been around for a long time now is Culture Clash by Jean Donaldson. And that's another eye-opener of a book as well.
Enjoy your show. Thanks.
Thanks.
Thanks for the call this morning. And there are a number of books that are out now that are people write, and people have written memoirs that involve, that are all about their dogs.
That book, it's going to be a movie, or it was a movie, My Dog Tulip.
It
was
is
a memoir
a movie,
about his dog. But it was, that book's been around for a long time, and that was pretty powerful. I read it when I was much younger. And, go to the library into the, like, the new book section in 636, and you'll see all kinds of books that, they're all fascinating in their own way. But people just feel very comfortable about sharing their life with their dog, and they're good. On the other hand, Lost Dogs, about Michael Vick's dogs, that was a tough read. That was hard. But it had, you know, the ending was optimistic, but the first half of the book was hard. But I think everybody should read that.
Hmm. Most of those dogs, were they able to be rehabilitated?
There are still some at the Best Friends Sanctuary in Utah, but several have been adopted and are doing well. One I know is a therapy dog, and that book gives you a better idea of the outcome. And then, of course, in another year or two, the ones that are in Utah are currently, I think some are up for adoption, some need some more intensive behavior modification. But they found as a whole the dogs weren't mean.
Hmm.
They just weren't. They were very compliant.
The people that were mean.
People were mean.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about something a little bit on the upside here to close out. We're here near the end of the time this morning.
What's going on with the Humane Society? Anything
new? I'm sure there's a lot. I'm no longer on the board of directors, however, so I'm not as much in contact. But our website, you never shake that when you've been involved with it. CUHumane.org is just chock full of information. Great information, as a matter of fact, because we have a friend that maintains it.
Oh, no. Well, how rude. How rude.
So
it's Carol. It's not me.
Continue on with the website for the Humane Society.
CUHumane.org. And it's timely, good information, and always the pictures of the adoptable, all animals that we have, not just dogs and cats. We have a little pig.
Really?
Mm-hmm. They have Miss Picklesworth is a little, a little pot-bellied pig, and... I haven't been out to see her yet because I know she's so cute. She's about 25 pounds. She can sit up on her hind legs. She's litter trained because pigs can be trained. And that's, you know, that brings up that whole other thing. You know, pigs are extremely smart animals as well. They're more than just bacon on your plate. And to discover what they're capable of is remarkable. I mean, who'd think of litter training a little pig? But they did.
Yeah.
But they couldn't keep her, so she's up for adoption.
And also on the website there are lots of, there's a lot of good information, like kind of, you know, frequently asked questions.
Oh, sure.
Wonderful.
It is a huge resource, a great resource that's right there at your fingertips at cuhumane.org. And they always need volunteers. They always need people to help. And
if you're looking for an animal,
consider it. The first place to go, always. But the animals need good, positive interactions, too. So just being there and helping out where you can, it directly affects their well-being. So.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for coming in this morning.
Thank
you. Good to see you. And we'll see you in March.
And surely
it won't
be 8 below.
We can hope.
Don't call me Shirley.
And surely I won't be almost hitting a bus on the way here.
Don't call me Shirley.
Carol Lindholm and Jim Keel are with the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana, and they join us once a month on the first Friday of the month to talk about dogs.